Why not? Well, I'm going to delete it.
Weedy? That's okay. He's in.
Good afternoon. I am opening a meeting of the House Energy and Environment Committee on Tuesday, March 31st, 2015. Welcome, everyone. Today is going to be electric vehicle today. I'm going to be nice and quiet most of the day. But I always can count on my committee members to do a lot of the talking, so I don't think we'll be too quiet today. We're going to start off with opening a work session. I'm sorry.
I wasn't laughing. She was.
I moved the vice chair run the meeting.
Oh my gosh.
You're out of order.
So cute.
Oh, we're not work session. Dang.
This is much more entertaining.
Mr. Johnson.
Chair Vega Peterson, I move House Bill 3050 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Rick Johnson moves Bill 3050 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there discussion?
Do we know what we're voting on?
Can you tell us?
Oh, yeah. Beth, why don't we go ahead and talk a little bit about the bill?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 3050 was heard last week, and this is the bill that would modify requirements for the composition of boards of directors of the regional air quality control authorities. There's no revenue or fiscal impact.
Yeah, and this was Representative Lively's bill that you heard while I was here. Okay, any discussion on the bill? Any further discussion? No amendments needed, so if the clerk could call the roll, please.
Representative Hunt.
Oh, he stepped out.
He'll be right back.
Come grab him.
Mm-hmm. Representative Colby.
Aye.
Representative Benz.
Aye.
Representative Boone.
Aye.
Representative Widener.
Excused.
Representative Helm.
Aye.
Vice Chair Johnson.
Aye.
Vice
Chair Reardon.
Aye.
Chair Vega Peterson. Aye. Her can be excused. We can come back to it. Okay. The motion passes. Who would like to carry this bill? Should we let Representative Lively carry the bill?
Sure.
All right. We'll have Representative Lively carry the bill. All right. With that out of the way, I'm going to go ahead and close the work session on House Bill 3050 and open a public hearing. Colleagues, we have several bills related to electric vehicles today, and so I'm going to go ahead and open a public hearing on House Bill 2573, 2585, and 3129. We have Representative Barnhart here to testify. Before he does that, Beth, can you give us an explanation of those three bills, please?
Sure. Madam Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2573 would authorize a residential tenant to submit an application to install an electrical vehicle charging station for personal non-commercial use. There is a dash one amendment for this bill on OLIS. There's no revenue impact, and the fiscal statement has not yet been prepared. House Bill 2585 would declare that a charging station is the personal property of the owner of a lot in a planned community or a unit in a condominium, unless a different result is negotiated between the parties. There is a dash one amendment on OLIS. There is a revenue statement has been issued, and the fiscal statement has not yet been prepared. House Bill 3129 would authorize a tenant to submit an application to install an EV charging station for personal non-commercial use in compliance with the Act. No amendments, no revenue impact, and the fiscal statement has not yet been prepared.
Okay, thank you, Beth. Representative Barnhart, welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, my name is Phil Barnhart. I'm the state representative from House District 11. With me today is Michael Burdick, my chief of staff, who is here to help correct errors that I commit in the process of describing these three bills. Let me note that that in discussing them, that the central theme is making it easier for Oregonians to purchase or lease and use electric vehicles. One of the attributes of electric vehicles is that under most normal circumstances, they take significantly longer to fuel than buying gasoline to put in your internal combustion engine car. And therefore, they require a little different approach to facilities than are needed by an internal combustion engine car. I believe that when we handle those facilities correctly, we end up with a vehicle which is vastly more convenient to use, much cleaner, frankly, a lot more fun to drive, as an electric vehicle driver for 2.5 years, I can attest to that. And in the long term, at least, far less expensive, both for maintenance and fueling, than a gasoline-powered car. So what are the attributes that we need? The most important thing is to allow a place for people to plug in their electric vehicle when the car is going to be in one spot for a number of hours. Where are those places? Mostly those places are at home or at work. If you live in a single-family house with a garage or a carport running a 240-volt electric line to the spot where your car can plug in is a relatively trivial enterprise. And while it may cost $1,000 or it may cost $100, you should have no problem doing that. The other, plugging in at work is more of a challenge because you don't control the parking at work. So California has already adopted several of these concepts, and I want to just sort of go through them fairly quickly. House Bill 3129 is a bill that essentially requires that a lessee may, when there's a parking space assigned to the tenant, or there's spaces available to the tenant, may install electric vehicle charging in an office building, work site, parking lot, that kind of thing. And the bill limits the landlord's right to object to the things that you would normally expect from somebody who is a willing participant in the process. Those would be things like following the building codes, design, and that kind of thing. Very similar to the bill that the last legislature passed around the use of electric vehicle charging at condominiums where the vehicle owner is also the owner of a unit. In this case, we're dealing with business. I happened to sit with a business owner, a lessee, at a dinner back in November, who described to me that he had funds available to install electric vehicle charging. He's in the business that involves green energy, and he wanted to be able to encourage his employees to drive electric vehicles to work and to plug in. But the landlord refused to allow him to do it, even though he was willing to pay the entire cost. This bill essentially allows for that to occur with some exceptions. House Bill 2573 is a similar bill that relates to residences. In this case, we're talking about tenants who rent their place of residence. And it would be similar. I did prepare a dash-2 amendment. Having just reviewed it again, I realized that the amendment doesn't actually do what we want. I'm going to have to submit another one to actually accomplish the proper result. What this amendment does is it basically says that unless a space is assigned to a unit, this bill doesn't apply. And, of course, that wasn't the intention. I will note that today, just a few minutes ago, while we were actually in another committee, I received word that a multi-unit landlord association is concerned about this bill, and I would invite them to bring their specific concerns to me so that we can draft amendments that will meet their specific concerns if that's possible. I think it's extremely important that we get policies like this on the books in Oregon to make it easier for people to buy electric vehicles. But I think it's also important to take into account the legitimate and reasonable concerns raised by owners. So I invite them to approach me and the committee about that issue, and to bring us specific suggestions for amendment. Then finally, last time we passed House Bill 3301 that allowed for individuals who own in a condominium or condominium associations to install electric vehicle chargers. We spent a lot of time on that bill, as the members of the committee may recall. And it turns out that there was one area that was left out, and that had to do with the ownership leaving an ambiguity regarding the ownership of the equipment. What this bill does is essentially say that unless they have a different agreement, the equipment belongs to the person who paid for it, the the owner of the condominium unit. But it's also designed to be flexible because there may be any number of reasons why the unit, in fact, ought to belong to the condominium association rather than the owner. And that would be something that they could agree to. If, for example, the unit were in the charging station were installed at a, in a common parking structure, and it was agreed that at least some of the cost would be borne by the condominium association, it would be very reasonable for them to be the owner of the charging station rather than the tenant. In addition to that, there are new facilities now that are now available that will allow limited service to be used by a number of different vehicles that would be charged seriatim or at a lower rate in order to accommodate the electric service that's available. Those tend to be more expensive, but they also mean that that they can be done at far lower installation costs. What that would mean is if I have a dinner date and I need to be out in 2 hours, my car would be charged first. If Representative Reardon is there for the evening, his car would be charged later and maybe even at a slower rate, so that by the time he got in the vehicle in the morning to go to work, it would be fully charged. But that way we would parse out the electricity available through the available service in the system. That would be an appropriate one for the condominium association to actually own the system rather than the homeowners association rather than the individual owner. And I think that's all I have unless there are questions. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative. Are there questions for Representative Barnard? Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative, for your testimony in bringing these bills by. As I read, I guess, the two that deal with, it'd be 3129 and I think 2573, the only out that a landlord could have regarding prohibiting the installation would be that, one, the premises do not have at least one parking space per dwelling unit, and two, that the landlord already provides at least fill-in-the-blank number of electric vehicle charging stations, so meaning he already provides at least a minimum number that hasn't been determined.
Right.
But he doesn't have the right to simply say it doesn't fit in with the way I want this property to be used. It doesn't fit in with what I deem to be an appropriate use. And it doesn't give, I think, the out to say, you know, I'm a little concerned about creating a publicly accessible plug-in that's going to require maintenance and or could be susceptible to vandalism or other, you know, valid, I think, you know, concerns like that. So did you write it that way intentionally, or would you look for more off-roads for perhaps landlords who might want to have the ability to say yes or no, but under circumstances that fit their needs?
Right. Thank you. Chair Vega Peterson, Representative Johnson. I think that's a wonderful question. Let me deal with the basic issue first. The purpose of this bill is to tell a landlord that he doesn't have any choice about it, that, in fact, if your tenants want to drive electric vehicles, it's your job to accommodate that within the framework of the bill. Now, to be a little less blunt and less direct, the other issues that you raise are important ones. They're not addressed currently in the bill, and that's specifically why I asked the multi-unit association that apparently is going to testify today, or at least has approached me, to approach us with specific amendments that they would like that might lead to a rule that is less blunt than the one proposed in this bill, or that would require the tenant to manage some of the issues that you raise. And let me give you an example of what I'm thinking about. I have a charging plug-in receptacle. It's not actually a charging unit. It's simply a 240-volt outlet in a condominium that my wife and I have an ownership in Portland. It was quite expensive to get that installed, as you might imagine. But that is behind a shield, and it is locked when I'm not there, when we're not using it. So that does deal with at least a piece of the security issue and a piece of the fire hazard issue. Other pieces of the fire hazard issue, of course, could be dealt with requirements to that these things be installed by licensed electricians using the most updated building codes and things of that sort. Now, there may be all kinds of reasons why an electric vehicle charging station makes no sense to install in a spot. And, of course, the most of the issues that are that arises will be dealt with by the cost. Examples, there isn't sufficient electric service at the location. The cost of providing that service could be very substantial. Mm-hmm. The tenant under this bill would be required to pay that. Installing the conduits to a spot or location generally might be extremely difficult and quite expensive to do. Again, the tenant would be required to pay that. It would not be on the landlord to do it. These costs add up. They get to the point after a while where the tenant is going to say, gee, I don't think I'm going to do that because it's simply too expensive. So I think that there's a built-in safety for the landlord in that kind of situation. If you happen to have a very wealthy and eccentric tenant who wants to put in extra service in your facility, you still have the option of requiring that it be done in a secure way, following the proper electrical codes, that the power company is able to provide the service, and all of those kinds of things. It took me a year to get my charger installed or my plug-in installed at my parking space in the condominium unit, and that was without most of the problems that I just described to you. But again, just simply to finish, if the association believes that there are other issues that need to be addressed to protect landlords, I am quite willing to do that if they can be specific about what they are.
Just to follow up then, I guess just to restate, I guess what I hear you saying is that your objective here is to make it impossible for a landlord or I guess the property owner to deny a tenant the ability to provide a plug-in service, but you're willing to consider some mitigating circumstances, if you will, that might make it more amenable to their personal needs. But your overall objective is to say thou shalt be able to access a plug-in or a charging station somehow, some way.
Madam Chair, Representative Johnson, let me answer it this way. If Oregon is to significantly reduce its carbon pollution over time, it will have to use a number of different methods to get there. We heard, as you know, testimony in the Revenue Committee recently that even a very large tax on carbon-producing fuels would only reduce carbon pollution in Oregon for transportation fuels by 20%. If we are going to get to the point where we actually have a significant reduction in pollution as a result of carbon pollution in Oregon, we're going to have to use a multifaceted approach. As I've already explained, for electric vehicles, that means the ability to charge when the car is parked for an extended period of time. That means at home and or at work. So the state policy, if we're serious about reducing carbon pollution, is going to have to be that for most places of work, most places of residence, there will have to be the potential, at least, for the capacity for electric vehicle charging. And I recognize that this is a significant shift in the way we tend to think about transportation, in the way we tend to think about issues in the way people get around. But if we're serious about climate change issues, if we're serious about reducing costs, if we're serious about reducing the importation of transportation fuels that put carbon into the air, this is the kind of policy that the state needs to adopt. There are many others. This set of bills only addresses one. And that has to do with making it easier for individuals to make their own contribution toward climate change by purchasing and using electric vehicles. Obviously, some others are coal to clean and a variety of other options.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Representative Reardon.
I'm a technical guy. I like to build a lot of things myself, so just questions about the actual installation. So I'm assuming that you would be running conduit wire from the individual unit, condo, rental unit, whichever, to some parking spot somewhere.
Thank you.
And then there's, just spell it out. And then on to the end of that, you're going to maybe have a charging unit. So there was a, you talked a little bit about, you know, somebody paying for that installation, and then somebody's going to pay for the charging unit, and who owns the charging unit when they leave.
Yep.
So would I assume that it's going to be, the power is going to be coming from that person's individual unit, so that they're charged for the electricity that's used?
Thank you, Madam Chair, Vice Chair Reardon. I refer to page 2 of the bill am I looking at the right one?
It's the workplace.
Oh, that's the workplace one. It's 2573. It looks to me like it's the same issue. Lines 8 through about 12. Basically says that the charging station is considered to be the personal property of the tenant, and the tenant must remove the charging station, restore the premises to condition before the installation upon termination of the rental agreement under this bill, unless the landlord and tenant negotiate a different outcome. If they actually have an agreement, a contract, they could agree to something else. Now, on your other point, the question about how the electricity would be installed, I think that what you describe is one possibility. There are many others. In the condominium that I described, and many apartment buildings are like this, the unit electricity is several floors above the parking, and it's simply not possible in any reasonable way to run a conduit from that spot to the parking. What we ended up doing in the condominium that I have a unit in is we ran a separate meter off of the lighting panel, the Commons lighting panel,
okay,
which they read every 6 months and send me a bill. We're not there all the time, so we don't run up a big electric bill charge.
Okay.
And I just pay them for the cost of the electricity plus the cost of reading the meter. There are other ways that it could be done easily. If you have an apartment building with a separate electric room, probably you would have to do something like that rather than trying to run it from the individual unit. If you have a small apartment building with units that enter off onto the parking directly, it may very well be possible to run it from the electrical meter that is assigned to that unit. I think it's going to depend on the specifics of that situation. And, of course, the willingness of a tenant to actually go to the expense of doing this may very well depend on what the options are and what the cost of doing that would be. I have to say, and let me just be clear, I don't think this bill forces a landlord to allow this installation unless the tenant is willing to throw unlimited cash at it. I think what it does is it opens the door to negotiation and discussion.
Thank you.
Representative Foley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Much along the same lines as Representative Reardon, I don't see it in the bill, but wondering about a definition of charging station. For example, does that include the meter that you installed and the conduit to the charging unit itself, so that that all becomes personal property?
Yeah.
Or whether you're going to leave that up to building codes to define by rule, I think it might be useful to really have a specific definition of what the charging station actually encompasses. Or do you have that in the bill?
Well, I agree, Madam Chair, Representative Holby. I agree that that's an important point. Making that clear is important, and perhaps that's one of the issues that the associations that have approached us this afternoon may want to talk about. I'm perfectly willing to make certain that that's clear in the bill before the committee adopts it. And that it's done in accordance with the building code, the electrical requirements, that a competent electrician install it that if it requires inspection, it's inspected. All of those normal things that one would expect for a safe installation.
Thank you so much for these bills. It's my understanding that there are some other electric vehicles, can you hear me? A lot of the other EV bills that we have in other committees, including transportation. And so I think the goal that we have is to sit down and talk about all of the different bills that are out there around electric vehicles and figure out where we can do this session on those.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I will note that there's at least one in the Business and Labor Committee that will make this issue much simpler if it were to be adopted, and that is the installation of conduits without any electrical capacity at all, current capacity, in new construction, significantly reducing the cost for landlords, tenants, whoever, for later installation. And I've already been talking with the chair of that committee about that issue.
Thank you very much, Representative Barnard.
Thank you.
So, for this bill, we only had one person signed up to testify. Is there anybody else here who'd like to testify? I'd like to call up
Joe.
No.
Joe. Okay, so we have Jeff. What's Jeff's name? Jeff L. It's Jeff. Oh, there we are. Welcome. Thank you for coming. Please go ahead.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. For the record, my name is Jeff Allen. I'm Executive Director of Drive Oregon. We're a nonprofit organization that works to grow the electric vehicle industry and promote electric transportation in the state, about 100-plus members, one of which is IBEW. I'm happy to have my board member, Joe Esmond, here as well.
Go ahead. No.
Okay.
You're doing fine.
So I have brief written testimony I submitted. I won't belabor that. I just wanted to reinforce what Representative Barnhart was saying, is that this kind of legislation is really important, mostly to open a conversation between the driver of the electric vehicle and the folks who control their ability to charge. It's been one of the big challenges with people who want to drive electric vehicles, and we hear from them all the time, but they say, I don't have a garage, or I live in a condo and the condominium folks won't even talk to me. We have found with the bill that was passed last session, House Bill 3301, that's exactly what it's done. It's opened the conversation. We've been contacted by a number of homeowners associations, and often the first thing they say is, we heard there's this bill that says we have to give everyone charging stations. But once we start the conversation, we say, no, it doesn't say that. It just says you have to have a conversation with them about allowing them to have the opportunity to charge if they want to drive an electric vehicle. And usually what they find is there's a very reasonable way to accommodate that once they have the conversation. So we support all three of these bills. I'm happy to answer any questions about specifics as well.
Thank you. When we go ahead and have questions for this witness, Representative Benz.
So thank you for being here. It seems to me that this whole concept is a part about electric cars most of us don't generally think about. And so perhaps you could share with us a couple of things, kind of like this, the normal cost of one of these facilities starting from scratch where wherever you live doesn't have anything. It just has a place to park, and maybe it's some distance away from the building. And so just share with us the electrical hookup costs, the separate meter and all of that, so that maybe what we ought to be doing is warning people buying electric cars that they're going to have to incur this cost, so they don't just zoom off and then suddenly realize there's no place to plug in.
Yeah. Chair Bigup, Representative Benz, that's a very good point. And one of the things that most people don't realize until they get into this is that in a lot of cases, the cost of the charging unit itself is minimal. They've been coming down quite a bit. If you have a house with a garage that has a 220 outlet, like a dryer plug in it, you can go to Home Depot and buy one of these chargers for well under $1,000 and plug it in and you're done. It gets more expensive, and often the biggest expense is digging up the concrete to put in the conduit, which is why it's...
I'm sure, may I interrupt?
Yep.
Would you, in giving us asked the numbers. The anticipation is, at least I've read about it, that that we will be using these cars as storage devices for, so we can cycle the batteries. So whatever we're going to hear from you, I want it to be, I want you to give me the numbers for the cost of having this thing work both directions.
Yeah. Okay. I would say it varies a lot, but probably a fair range is between $1,000 and $10,000, depending on how far you have to run conduit and what it costs to do the installation and how smart you want the charger to be. So those chargers at this point that can go in both directions are more expensive. Like everything else, the costs are coming down. At this point, we don't yet have the regulatory structure that really lets the batteries be used that way. There's some interesting pilot projects, but I'd say we're still at least 5 or 10 years away from really being able to do that at scale. But as a ballpark, I would say 1 to 10,000. Joe, do you have a?
I wish I was in the contracting business for 10,000. That seems very high.
Yeah.
Bill doesn't think so.
Yeah. The higher expense comes in if you have to dig up concrete. You know, in the extreme case, if you have a parking garage in a condominium, old condominium building, and you have to dig 50 feet of trench and put in conduit and upgrade a panel. But as I said before, as Representative Barnhart said, once you start talking to the landlord, there's almost always a very inexpensive, reasonable way to do it if everyone is willing to work together, which is why we really like this approach of kind of creating the negotiating platform but not trying to do a mandate that says you must provide charging to your tenants or something like that, because it just wouldn't work nearly as well. You really want to be able to customize it for the situation.
So if the my vision is of an apartment complex with 500 people out here out on the other side of town where my daughter lived for a while, and all of the cars parked higgly-piggly all over the place. Mm-hmm. And so the idea would be, as more and more electric cars present, the yard strewn with cables running out to each car, or a separate standalone parking meter-like device in front of each car with a buried conduit leading to it. What can you get? Searching is a picture of the future. Maybe you could share it with us.
Right, absolutely, Madam Chair. Representative Bentz, that's what you want to avoid, is the extension cords. And we've got pictures we could show of people running the extension cords out their window and across the parking lot, and that's what you want to avoid. So it really depends on the circumstances, where the power is in the current development. The ideal thing, if it's easy and if it's cheap, is to just have probably a pedestal type charging unit near where the person who owns the electric vehicle is. Longer term, it probably makes more sense to have clusters of those. So perhaps instead of having the parking space right in front of your house, you need to have one that's 50 feet away, because that's where the power box is, and it's a lot cheaper to put the charger there. So that's the kind of situation where you really want to have a conversation between the landlord and the driver to say, well, you can have the charger right in front of your apartment, but it's going to cost you an extra $5,000 versus putting it 100 feet away where the power is already there.
And one final question, I really do mean it, Madam Chair. So the way to do this, of course, would be allow the landlords to make money off these folks so they could add a service charge on the electricity provided.
Yep.
So that they are they're willing to put these in so they can make money. Is that what's happening everywhere else?
Madam Chair, Representative Bentz, there are examples of that. And again, I think in a lot of these situations, that would be the ideal, is there are companies that are our members who make charging stations and manage networks of charging stations that will come in and say, we'll install it, we'll manage it. There's no upfront cost to you. We're going to make our money off of the drivers who use it. In a lot of cases, will make more sense to put a few of those, like at that 500-unit apartment building. Maybe you have 5 or 10 of those in one central location, and that's the service you provide to your residents. So I like that part of the bill that says if you have a minimum level of chargers in your unit, you don't have to accommodate each individual person. And I think for a lot of those bigger developments, that will make a lot more sense.
Thank you.
Representative White.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm sorry to make you have to call on me with your voice the way it is today. So I hate to think that my coffee might have helped make it worse. Okay. Question I have, because I can see lots of reasons why a property owner would not want to do this as well. I'm just trying to think, because right now we're kind of opening the conversation and putting everything, basically tramping on personal property rights, the way I see it. And you have an apartment complex. Right now, the way the bill's drafted, it's basically helps the rich, is the way I see it, because the rich can afford to actually go and have the conduit or the power and everything put there, rather than saying to somebody building their facility, hey, we will give you a tax credit to put the stuff in, or we're going to help accommodate you and we'll help pay for this to put it in if we're truly being serious about it. But the other concern I have, because we're talking, Representative Bentz kind of hit it with these cords everywhere. I parked near Representative Barnhart, who's shaking his head out there. Well, if I walked by his car, I could trip over that cord. Who's liable? Is it the state that's liable, or would it be Representative Barnhart when I hire Representative Bentz to help me in this lawsuit on who I would sue?
Well, you couldn't afford him.
I couldn't afford Representative Bentz? So.
No.
So, I mean, there's lots of liability issues where I could see where a landlord just would not want to get caught up in this issue. So just kind of wondering if you guys have discussed that issue at all, because from a private property perspective, I can see where they would not want to get into this environment with the charging stations, because they are a danger, too. I mean, one person trips on a cord, twists their ankle, anything like that happens, you've just opened them up to liability that they may not want to face.
So, Madam Chair, Representative Widener, first of all, I would sue them both. I'm not aware yet of any lawsuits around charging stations for that, but it has been something that has been talked about as a potential trip hazard. And I know it is addressed in the bill that if there is a liability issue, that would be the responsibility of the person who's putting in the charging station. So that was the language the representative was just showing me. I do agree, and he referred to, Representative Barnhart referred to this other legislation that would create some standards for new construction that says a certain number of spaces have to have conduit laid, because that's the cheapest and best way to address this going forward. It's pretty cheap to put in a pipe, pretty expensive to fill it backwards. So just a couple of other points I would make. One is that it's not necessarily a matter of wealth. A lot of these cars are available for less than $200 a month to lease, which is what some people easily spend in gasoline. So if you're basically, you know, getting a car that costs less than what you're spending in gasoline, if you can put in a charger, if you're in one of those situations where it's relatively inexpensive, put in a charger for $1,000 or $2,000, it can still make economic sense. That's particularly the case for the commercial tenants. We've talked to a lot of businesses that would like to support their employees who drive to work in an electric vehicle, but they have to negotiate that with the landlord of that office building. So I wouldn't necessarily assume that. I would say it's highly motivated drivers, for sure, that this is going to help in the first instance. But then the other thing that we see is over time, the more of those situations get resolved, the more landlords start to see this is not as big a deal as we thought it was. And so now we're starting to see condo associations and homeowner associations be more willing to negotiate and to come to a solution that in some cases they're happy to put it in as an amenity for their tenants to, you know, be able to raise the rent. So I think it becomes more normalized over time.
Any further questions? Oh.
I can share a little bit of my personal experience. It might be informative, but it's only one person, so I grant you that. But we are, in fact, on our second leaf, paying $215 a month, so very affordable. We're doing it, so I don't have to drive my F-150 back and forth to Salem. I'm saving money. We did look at putting a charger in a house, but our service entrance is in the center of our basement. Mm. And we needed the charging unit out in our detached garage. So that was about a $4,000 estimate for that particular job. So we were plugging our 110 cord into the wall. Existing outlet works fine. It's great. So with all of that testimony on your behalf, no extra charge. But do you have an estimate of how many people actually want to do what you're proposing? Have you collected that kind of data?
Mm. Madam Chair, Representative Reardon, that's a really good question. What I can tell you is that there's a pretty high percentage of people who live in rental housing and in apartments, and that's in the testimony. I pulled some numbers for Oregon, and I want to say it's approximately I don't have them. I know I have those numbers in here. About 35% of Oregonians, according to the data I found, rent, and about 11% of Oregonians live in apartments. So it's a pretty big population that deals with these issues. And then, of course, for employers, a lot of employers don't own their building. So on the commercial side, I'd say it's at least as much of an issue. And over time, we would expect that more of those folks would want to be able to plug in. Up till now, the early adopters of electric vehicles have tended to be people who own their own homes and have their own garages, just because that's it's easier for them.
It'd be interesting to see more data on the potential market for this at some point in the future. No, not a big hurry.
Yeah, I could say it's a challenge that. Folks who sell electric vehicles and chargers in other states are grappling with all over the country to try and figure out what is the best solution for existing construction. There's a couple of states that have adopted standards for new construction, but the existing construction retrofit is a real challenge.
Anyone else? Okay, thank you very much.
So the issue is, how much can the landlord charge the person with the electric car and still have the guy with the electric car save money? That's the space where this would work. How much is that savings? Mm-hmm. We could ask these two right here. They could tell us. But maybe you could tell us on a broader scale. Can you go to your tenants and say you should all buy electric cars because you're going to save so much? You'll still have to pay us a bunch so we can pay for the plug-in, but you'll still be way ahead. What's that number?
All right, Chair Vega Peterson, Representative Bentz. The issue is it's so specific to your own commuting and driving patterns. So basically, electric vehicles are ideal for people who drive 80 miles a day, roughly. You know, the more miles you drive, the more you save. So what's interesting, people often think, these are all being bought by people who live in Portland. The truth is, per capita, the biggest electric vehicle markets are the Corvallis area and the Rogue Valley, the Ashland-Medford area, and the suburbs of Portland. Because if you live in Portland and you commute 3 miles, it's hard to make an electric vehicle pay for itself. But if you're regularly driving 20, 30, 40 miles a day or back and forth to Salem, it pays for itself in a hurry. So that's part of the challenge. The other challenge with charging is that the cost of the electricity is very low. It's the equivalent of dollar a gallon gasoline. So that commute to Portland to Salem probably costs you about a dollar, dollar and a half worth of electricity each way. So it's hard to charge people enough to pay for the charging equipment, if that makes sense.
Yes. Thank you. Yes. Excellent.
Thank you. Good data. Thank you. So, just in case they have tough questions. So, if you don't mind, can we, since I have everybody sitting here, close the work session temporarily, public hearing, and do the work session real quick so we can get a couple of people who didn't vote?
Are you asking or telling me?
Would you mind waiting?
We're telling you.
Would you mind waiting 1 second? Okay. Thank you. I'm going to temporary.
No, my father explained. Yes.
Close the public hearing on House Bill 2573, 2585, and 3129, and reopen the work session on House Bill 3050.
Madam Chair, I move that we suspend the rules and allow Representatives Hurd and Representative Widener to vote on House Bill 3050. I don't believe it will change the outcome.
I don't believe so either. Representative Johnson moves allow our colleagues to vote on the bill. Any objections? Hearing none. Can the clerk call the roll?
Which one is that? Hold on. Time out.
Would you like to have the administrator?
Yes, I need to wait for a second, just to refresh where I'm at.
Sure. Beth, do you want to do a reminder of what that one is?
Representative, House Bill 3050 was the bill that modified the appointment, the composition of the boards of directors of regional air quality control authorities. It's Representative Lively's bill.
Representative Hurd.
Aye.
Representative Widener.
Okay, thank you very much. With that, I'm going to close the work session on House Bill 3050 and reopen the public hearing on House Bill 2573, 2585, and 3129. Mr. Esmond.
Thank you. For the record, Joe Esmond, IBW Local 48 in Portland, Oregon. I'm not going to get into any HOAs or et cetera and legal stuff. That's not why I'm here. I am on the board of Drive Oregon. Drive Oregon has electrons in their portfolio, and that's what we do, electricians. We have 10 charging stations at our facility, nine level twos and one 480 level three. And a 481 level three is like getting shocked with paddles. It's that much juice. So within under a half hour, your car is charged. We just see EV charging as part of our green portfolio, solar, wind, smart grid. So that's why I'll be in favor of this. When I got involved with Drive Oregon, and no offense, I wanted to make sure that Drive Oregon was a business model, not a visionary thing. So I'm very impressed that the Rogue Valley does this. It's a stream of manufacturers, GM, Ford, Mercedes on board. So it's as far as future apartment houses or condos, it's kind of, to me, it's like bike racks are now kind of standard, at least in the Portland area, if you have a condo or, a building, apartment building. Probably eventually more and more, because of the market, they'll have areas for charging stations. Wouldn't surprise me. That's it. Take any questions if you want.
Any questions? This sounds like so far it's a jobs bill for electricians.
There you go.
For lawyers who can sue in case of liability. So.
I will say having the cord strung around on the ground is an OSHA violation. But what do I know?
Mm-hmm. Any questions for Representative Harvey?
Thanks. I actually had a question for Representative Barnhart, if he'd answer us how much he actually pays a month for his electricity. Because one time he had told me that it was very cheap to get his electricity with an electric cord from his neighbor's house in the middle of the night.
Thank you, Madam Chair, I guess. Representative Bowlby, actually, I didn't say any such thing.
I must have misunderstood.
But, in Eugene, electricity is about 9 cents a kilowatt hour if you're in Tier 1 in EWEB, Eugene Water Electric Board System. My car gets about 3 miles for each kilowatt hour. It's pretty easy to do the arithmetic and see how that compares to gasoline. I spend about 22 kilowatt hours getting from Eugene to Salem on a reasonably decent weather day. So that's what was that? What would that be? About $2.25, something like that. So it's less than the price of a gallon of gasoline, and I don't think very many representatives get 70 miles to the gallon. So it is very inexpensive to buy electricity. The difficult part and the expensive part is exactly what these two gentlemen have been talking about. It's that last 20 feet from the current electrical system to an outlet or a charging station at a parking space. One comment about these other things. I would not put, if I were a landlord, I wouldn't agree to put a charging station in the most convenient parking place in the facility, unless that happened to be right next to the electrical room. If the electrical room is off in the corner someplace, that's where I'd put the charging stations, and those who wanted to use them would walk the extra 50 feet or 100 feet to their units. I would do the same thing as a landlord of a commercial structure. I would not put them right next to the front door of the grocery store for my employees. I'd put them in the back corner where the electrical facility probably is.
Thank you. That wasn't germane to my question.
I'm sorry.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Any other questions for this panel? Thank you all so much for your testimony. All right, I'm going to go ahead and close the public hearing on all these house bills.
Right.